Our next classics concert is all about Beethoven, Ludwig van Beethoven. As you might know, Beethoven would have just turned 250 years old. That is, if we had known his exact birthday. What we know is that he was baptized on December 17th, 1770, in the Catholic parish of St. Remigius in Bonn. His dad had worked as a tenor at the court of the Archbishop of Cologne. Additional income came from keyboard and violin lessons. Altogether, not a big salary. In other words, Beethoven grew up poor. His grandfather, though, also Ludwig van Beethoven, was the former music director in Bonn with a good salary and reputation. There are many stories of Beethoven's childhood that I don't intend to get into at this time. I only want to mention that his talent was recognized early on, that his father became a destructive force during his childhood. There are many stories of little Ludwig crying himself to sleep. That he had several intense teachers guiding him along, one of them making him get up in the middle of the night for his piano and organ lessons. But most importantly, that early on he developed a circle of lifelong friends that not only gave him a sense of home and financial support, but also the intellectual stimulation of the ideas of the Enlightenment. With 22 years old, in 1792, he fully moved to Vienna. The next years he studied. He studied composition with Haydn, receiving Mozart's spirit out of Haydn's hands. Don't forget, Mozart had died a year earlier, in 1791. Beethoven most probably had played for Mozart in a two-week trip to Vienna when he was 17 years old. Now, with 22, he studied with Haydn and Salieri, Mozart's nemesis. And he studied violin with Ignaz Schuppanzigh, the most important and famous violinist in Vienna. With 24 years old, he started to receive financial support from several Viennese noblemen. He was never in the service of the nobility, like Haydn. Beethoven knew his worth. He stayed independent, but received large stipends throughout his life. Overall, compared with Mozart, he was a slow starter, like a good wine. He needed time to mature. Don't forget, when Mozart was in his 20s, he was a celebrity all over Europe. With 25, Mozart had already written 13 operas and was working on Idomeneo and The Abduction from the Seraglio. When Beethoven was 25, he performed his very first public concert in Vienna. That same year, he published his very first official pieces of music in Vienna, a set of trios. The music that he composed, though, went far beyond anything Mozart had ever written. In 1793, Beethoven was 23 years old, his teacher, the composer Joseph Haydn, wrote to the prince in Vienna, "Your Electoral Highness, I am taking the liberty, dear Electoral Highness, to most submissively send you some musical pieces from the composition of my dear graciously entrusted student Beethoven, as a recommending proof of his studies to be entrusted by your Electoral Highness. Experts and amateurs alike must recognize from the accompanying pieces that Beethoven, with appropriate time, will develop into one of the most formidable artists in Europe, and I will be proud calling myself his master." The musician Cramer wrote at that time about Beethoven, "This is the man who will console us for the loss of Mozart." But who was this man? Let's start with accounts about his character, his religious and political views, and his ideas about nature. And let's have Beethoven's contemporaries speak for themselves. Actually, let's start with his appearance. That might be a little superficial, but why not, as we don't have any photographs of him. Only paintings. Here a report from that time by Miss Kizov, a friend of his. "When he came to our house, he usually looked through the door carefully to see if anybody would be here whom he didn't like. He was small and unassuming, with an ugly red face covered with scars from smallpox. His hair was very dark and unkempt, and was hanging shaggy around his face. His suit was very ordinary, and he spoke very much in his home dialect, with a very basic style, as his whole being didn't show anything of a higher education. Looking at paintings, he had fairly long black hair. Speaking of, during my time as music director in Winnipeg, I met the wife of the last descendant of Austrian composer Johann Nepomuk Hummel. In her possession was the walking stick of Haydn, rather short, as both Haydn and Beethoven were quite short by nature. And she also had an old glass frame with about 12 rolls of human hair carefully placed inside. One of them was by composer Hummel, one of them by German poet Goethe, and one of them by Beethoven. I have a photo of it. I have proof. Continuing with descriptions about Beethoven, another account is about his lifestyle when he was 25 years old. His friend, Lorenz von Breuning, wrote to his sister that year in 1795, "Beethoven composes very nicely and stands in high regard. He is living at a prince's residence who treats him like a friend. He has dinner with him, servants, a horse, etc." There is one other account I would like to share. This one is from 13 years later, but it gives another perspective. In 1808, Kapellmeister Johann Friedrich Richards writes, "Finally, I found Beethoven in a big, messy, lonely apartment. At first, he looked as dark as his apartment, but soon he lightened up and seemed as excited to see me as I was. He talked with me for a while, was very delightful and a little dull. He's a strong-looking nature, almost cyclop-like, yet quite sensitive, sweet and good." There are also accounts of early audience reactions towards his piano playing. The musician Wenzel Tomaszek wrote about a concert he attended in that time, 1796. "Because of Beethoven's wonderful performance, especially because of the amazing development of a fantasy, my being was shaken in a very strange fashion. Actually, my inner being was so deeply humbled that I couldn't touch the piano for many days." Beethoven's student Karl Czerny wrote, "His improvisations were in the highest degree brilliant and awe-inspiring. Whatever type of audience he performed for, he understood to create such an impression that there were no dry eyes. Actually, many in the audience broke out in loud sobbing." Let's talk briefly about Vienna at the time, 225 years ago. Vienna was the residence of the Holy Roman Emperor, a line of regents that lasted from 800 AD until 1806, for 1,000 years. Charlemagne being the first, Francis II, Beethoven's emperor, being the last of that specific line. The entire political system was very stable. There were no revolutionary winds blowing through Austria at that time. The American and French revolutions were far away. From the emperor down, nobility was more or less personally engaged in music making. Emperor Franz almost always played in the first violin section during orchestral concerts at his court. And when an opera was performed, the Empress Theresia would sing some of the arias and take part in the ensemble numbers. She was an accomplished artist. Those court concerts took place in the summer before an audience of nobles. At that time, many nobles played instruments. Prince Lichnowsky and his brother both were students of Mozart's. Let's get back to our actual program of the evening. Beethoven's overture to the ballet The Creatures of Prometheus, the second piano concerto, and his symphony number 8. As I said earlier, he was a slow starter. His first symphony Beethoven wrote with 30. Mozart with 9. The first piece on our program is Beethoven's short overture to the Creatures of Prometheus, a ballet that he composed in 1801 with 31 years old. It gives a nice insight into his state of mind, starting out as a symphonic composer. The Creatures of Prometheus is a ballet that premiered that same year at the Burgtheater, the Burg Theater in Vienna. Interestingly enough, it was premiered in 1808 at the Park Theater in New York City, being one of the first full-length works by Beethoven performed in the United States. The ballet tells the mythical story of Prometheus stealing the fire from Zeus in order to create mankind from clay. But not only this. It continues, finding mankind ignorant, with Prometheus introducing the ideas of science and art, based on Beethoven's own understanding of the Enlightenment. The music starts with seven massive chords, played in fortissimo by the full orchestra. ...1808 was the time of Napoleon. The French Revolution had turned Europe upside down. The guillotine had not only severed the head of the French king, but the head of the entire French royal system. Well, to a degree, as you know, as Napoleon crowned himself the new king of France. Nevertheless, with the American and French revolutions, it was the first time since the Romans 2,000 years earlier that monarchies were overthrown or put into its place and new forms of government explored. The beginning of the overture to the Creatures of Prometheus is exactly that. The beheading of the old and making space for the new. After the seven violent chords, an allegro bubbling with energy and forward motion. The world is in motion. And Beethoven is reflecting this in his music. Huge contrasts as the bubbling theme is being played 12 bars in pianissimo, then, without compromise and warning, 12 bars in fortissimo. Every composer has his or her artistic DNA. Of course, there are many things that make Beethoven Beethoven. Yet, there is one thing that stands out. His use of sforzato. Sforzato meaning hard, short articulations that make the music feel being punched. And Beethoven couldn't stop using that tool. The end of the overture will give an idea of his preferred technique, sforzati. Exciting, muscular, giving a hint of the scope of his imagination. His overture to Prometheus is only 5 minutes long, yet the music is coming right out of the French Revolution. Let's move on. After his second piano concerto, we are going to perform his Symphony No. 8. But before we delve into the music, we have to take a couple of detours to put that particular symphony into context. And as you know, context is everything. The 8th Symphony falls into his highly regarded prolific middle period. He wrote the work in 1812. Yes, that 1812, where the Russian army defeats Napoleon 75 miles west of Moscow and That 1812 from Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture with cannons and the sounding of the Marseillaise. But for Beethoven, there were other things at the time that shaped his character and style of composition. First of all, let's talk about the most obvious, the loss of his hearing. In a letter from 1801 to his friend Wegeler, Beethoven writes, "I can truly say that I am leading a life of misery. For 2 years now, I have ceased to attend any social functions, for I cannot bring myself to tell people I am deaf. If I had any other profession, it would not matter so much, but for a musician, not to be able to hear is a terrible calamity. What would my enemies, whose number is considerable, say of my deafness? To give you some idea of this strange affliction, let me tell you that when I go to the theater, I have to sit in the very front and lean forward to be able to understand the actors. I cannot hear the higher notes of instruments or singers if I am at a distance from them. As for conversation, it is surprising that there are some people who have not noted my difficulty, as I have always been easily distracted. They probably think my mind is wandering. Often I can hardly make out what a person with a soft voice is saying. I hear the voice, but cannot understand the words. And yet, if a person shouts, it is unbearable. What is now to become of me, only heaven knows." 1 year later, Beethoven's writing his now famous testament, the Heiligenstädter Testament, from October 6, 1802. He writes, "Born with an ardent, active temperament, ever inclined to the divisions of society, I was forced at an early age to seclude myself, to live in loneliness. If at times I'd tried to ignore all this, how harshly was I driven back by the doubly sad experience of my poor hearing. Yet I could not say to people, 'Speak louder, shout, for I am deaf.' Alas, how was it possible for me to admit to an infirmity in the one sense that in me should be more perfect than in others, a sense that I once possessed in the greatest perfection, a perception, indeed, such as few in my profession enjoy or ever have enjoyed. Oh, I cannot do it." He continues, "Forgive me, then, if you see me drawn back from your company, which I could so gladly share. My misfortune is double hard to bear, since because of it I am certain to be misunderstood. For me, there can be no reception in the company of others, no pleasure of conversation, no mutual exchange of thoughts. Only just as much as the most pressing needs demand may I venture into society. I am compelled to live like an outcast. If I venture into company, I am overcome by a burning terror, for I fear that I may be in danger of letting my condition come known. Thus has it been during the last year, which I have spent in the country, ordered by my wise physician to spare my hearing as much as possible. He almost encouraged my present instinctive mood, although often moved by the urge for companionship, I have let myself be tempted into it. But how humiliating it was when those standing near me heard a flute in the distance that I could not hear, or someone heard the shepherd singing, and again, I heard nothing." This was Beethoven in his own words, with 32 years old. What about his faith in God or a higher power? He underlined the following lines in Christian Sturm's book, Views of God's Creations, from 1808. "I must acknowledge thy goodness, for thou hast tried every means of bringing me unto thee. Sometimes thou madest me to feel the heavy hand of thy anger. Thou hast, by various chastisements, humbled my proud heart. Sickness and other misfortunes hast thou inflicted upon me so that I might realize my transgressions. I have but one prayer, O God. Do not cease to work to make me better. Let me be fruitful only in the good works that thou wouldst have me do. This was a passage Beethoven had underlined in Christian Storm's book, Views of God's Creations. Beethoven's biggest solace, though, came from nature. Anton Schindler, his earliest biographer and assistant, wrote, "Let us put it more clearly by saying that in Beethoven we have a man in whom nature was fully personified. It was not so much the laws of nature that fascinated him as its elemental power. While the only aspect of his total pleasure in nature that preoccupied him was his own emotional response." And again, Beethoven underlined the following lines in another book of Christian Sturm. "One may truthfully call nature a school for the heart, for she teaches us in a very enlightened manner the obligations to God, to ourselves, and to our fellow man that it is our duty to fulfill." So, we talked a little about his health, religious views, and the importance of nature. There are two other things that happened during the time of the composition of his Eighth Symphony. In 1812, the year he composed his Eighth Symphony, he wrote a famous letter to the immortal beloved, die unsterbliche Geliebte. 10 small pages written with pencil. He is pouring out his heart to his beloved, a mysterious beloved. As you know, Beethoven was never married. And, as far as we know, he never had a serious girlfriend, mostly due to his deafness. So the following letter gives insights into his very romantic soul. He writes, "In the morning, my angel, my all, myself, only a few words today, and indeed with pencil. Remain my faithful only treasure, my all, as I for you the rest the gods must send, what must and should be for us, your youthful Ludwig. I say to myself and to you, arrange that I can live with you. As much as you love me, I love you even more deeply, but never hide yourself from me. Is not our love a true healer, edifice?" To finish off the setting of the scene of the time of his composition of the Eighth Symphony, I must mention the now famous incident during his summer in the spa town of Teplitz. We have an account of Beethoven and Goethe, the German poet, reacting to the emperor passing them in the gardens of Teplitz that summer. Beethoven's friend Bettina von Arnim writes, "The empress with several princes and princesses were in Teplitz. On the walk of Goethe and Beethoven, the entire court of the empress with all their princes appeared. Beethoven said to Goethe, 'Just stay with me. They have to move to the side, not us.' Goethe had a different opinion, and he started feeling uncomfortable. He got out of Beethoven's arm, walked to the side, took off his hat, and waited his turn, while Beethoven, with folded arms, walked straight through the group, only tipping his hat lightly, whereas the emperor and the princes gave way to him, greeting him friendly. After that, Beethoven turned around to wait for Goethe, who was bowing deeply several times, waiting for them to pass him. Then Beethoven said, 'I waited for you because I honor you, but you showed too much reverence to them.' Afterwards, Beethoven came over to us to tell us the whole story and was excited that he could tease Goethe that way. All of this is true, as told by Beethoven several times in the same fashion." Let's talk Eighth Symphony. He wrote both symphonies, number 7 and 8, in 1812. The 7th at the beginning of that year, the 8th in late spring and summer in the before-mentioned Austrian spa town of Teplitz. Teplitz was full of high society because of the recent visit of Napoleon. Goethe, Princess Kinsky and Lichnowsky, Brentano, etc., everybody was there. In the spring of 1812, Beethoven and his friends gathered for a little party. The inventor of the metronome, Maelzel, was part of the group. Maelzel was the mechanic who had taken the idea of Winkel's first metronome and added a scale to it to change the speed of the pendulum. To pay tribute to Maelzel's achievement, Beethoven invented a silly canon during that party. The melody was the exact beginning of the Allegro Scherzando of his 8th symphony. The text goes, ta 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 lieber lieber Maelzel. It's very silly, of course. Beethoven added the metronome markings later on to most of his music in the following years. Now, the 8th symphony is one of the symphonic works not performed as often as the Eroica, or his 5th symphony, or the 7th, or the 9th, for that matter. The common opinion is that it lacks the weight of the other symphonies, the gravitas, the depth, the spiritual scope. Instead, he wrote music that is extremely well-crafted and fun, lighthearted, as if he was creating one musical prank after the other. Beethoven and lighthearted pranks, which leads to the assumption and thesis that the 8th symphony is actually the only symphony that characterizes the real Beethoven, the person. Sure, all the other symphonies are a reflection of Beethoven, you might say. In the 1st symphony, well, he gets going. He's proving himself. The 3rd, the Eroica, was a statement for Napoleon before he scratched out the dedication. The 5th was fate knocking at the door, reflecting this part of him that was heavily burdened because of his loss of hearing, his illnesses, but also his triumphs. The 6th symphony, a dedication to nature. The 7th, a massive statement of his character, with a funeral march in the middle. And then, the 8th. To me, the 8th is pure Beethoven, without his physical trials, without his deafness and illnesses, free and healthy. It's him, open like a book. His deafness made him that hardened and difficult person that he wrote about earlier. But inside, he always stayed a lighthearted prankster, very determined, but full of joy. The 8th symphony is a picture of that Beethoven, a sensitive and soft soul underneath the hardened shell. Listen to the first theme in the first movement, lyrical, grand. The 2nd theme, hopeful and searching. The development, obsessive, repetitive, relentless, yet so positive, so Beethoven. The 2nd movement is the one dedicated to Maelzel, the co-inventor of the metronome. The entire movement is one big tease. It's as if Beethoven was so aware of the German correctness. Everything is just very correct and in time. With little surprises, through sudden changes in dynamic and shifts in the meter, Beethoven has fun getting the listener off balance. The third movement sounds like a German country dance. It has two parts, the scherzo creates fake entrances and a very original trio with two horns with solo cello accompaniment. Listen to this. And the last movement is fast. A play between triplets and eighth notes. A simple cell that he builds into one of the most impressive movements ever written and the longest movement of the entire symphony. Brilliant. Brilliant as the composer himself. Thank you all for listening, and see you all Saturday evening for our belated birthday party for Ludwig von Beethoven.